Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org or georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on tithing versus the income tax when we come back. You know, when you're making $50,000 a year, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Then, in addition to that, you pay a 17% income tax on that $50,000. Now, that's another $8,500. That means you just paid an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax. Now, that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that's being advertised. I thought you'd think that was just real special. If you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Now, tax and status is available on compact disc. That's our home school. If you are online, why don't you go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. Remember, georgegordon.org. O-R-G, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about income tax and tithing. I got a letter from a young man by the name of Phil. He said, we have been reviewing the tithing scriptures, and all the scriptures that we see are related to agricultural products or herds, flocks, and cattle. Where in the scripture does it say that a tithe is paid on all increase? And where in the scripture does it say that labor is an increase? And if I exchange my labor for wood, isn't that a property exchange, and how did I increase from that? Well, we answered two of the questions so far. The first two were answered in the book of Numbers, Numbers 18, verses 20 through 28, and the first one was Leviticus 27, 30 through 34, but that's just the cursory part. We haven't got to the real heavy-duty stuff yet, Phil. Stand by. It gets worse as we go along. We've discovered so far that it's worse than one tithe. There's actually three. We haven't seen that yet, but I'm telling you ahead of time, I'm going to be anticlimactic and tell you the answers, and then we're going to go through and I'll show you the questions. So there are three tithes. It gets worse than that. There are seven holy day offerings. These are called free will offerings. They could amount to as much as your tithe. Hell, they could amount to more than your tithe. I don't know. Depends upon you and how much you want to give. Tithing is generally done to churches, but we haven't found it yet, but I'm telling you ahead of time, that churches don't receive the tithe. I showed you last time the guy that gets the tithe. This is God's direct statute. The guy that gets the tithe is a guy named a Levite. Whoever this guy, Levi or Levite is, that's in Numbers 18, verses 20 through 28. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. As far as I know, our generations haven't ceased yet. And until there is a cessation of our generations, Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, Jerry Falwell, and Jimmy Swaggart have no claim on your tithe. None. Zero. Zilch. Tithe does not go to religion. Tithe does not go to church. Tithe goes to running the government. Now, of course, we decided that we weren't going to run the government the way God had instructed us to run the government. We decided that we wanted a king like all the nations around us. That was over in 1 Samuel chapter 8. We came to God one day, gave him the finger, stuck our finger right in his eye, and we said, "Get the hell out of our lives, would you?" And he said, "Okay, I'll butt out." But he gave us a warning in 1 Samuel chapter 8 about verse 19. He said, you know, you're going to cry out to me because of this king that you want. This king who's going to tax you to death, create a military-industrial complex, and then take all of your property away from you. And when you cry out to me in that day, I will not hear you. That's why I always tell my students, you don't need to pray to Jesus about the income tax. He already told you the answer to that story. He said, you want to give me the finger, I'll tell you where to stick it where there's no daylight also, partner. Or as John Wayne would say, pilgrim. So that's the way that game is played. Now we're up to another wild statement. Listen to this. In Deuteronomy 10, verse 14, here's the creator of the universe. I mean, this is God himself. This is the great Hoochla. And listen to this. He says, behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens is the Eternal's, the Eternal your God, the earth also and all that therein is. There's that word all again. He doesn't limit this just to heaven. You know, normally we look down here and we say, God, look up there into the heaven. There must be more than one because he's got heaven of heavens. He said, there is a heaven, whatever heaven is, there's a heaven out there on the other side of what you guys are calling heavens, plural, heavens, plural. I can only see one. I look out there, now I don't know, they got this telescope up there in the air, you know, they call it the Hubble telescope. And they're able to look out there 12.5 billion light years. Remember old Carl Sagan with his billions and billions, it looks out there for a piece, and as far out as they can see, there's just more of the same, and they said they're going to launch another one here pretty shortly, and I got a prediction, hell, I'm just as good a prophet as anybody, and when they get out there, they say they're going to be able to see out 25 billion light years. So they're going to double that. When I was a kid, they could look out there with the telescope down there at Mount Palomar, 2 billion light years. Now they got Hubble out there, they can look out there 12 billion light years. They got a new one coming on stream, and they're going to look out there 25 billion light years. And when they get all through looking, they're going to see more of the same. But God says on the other side of that more of the same, there's something out there, and he says, that's my heaven, and I own that one too. And all of the real estate between planet Earth and as far out as you can see is my piece of real estate. And then he gets kind of real specific, and he says, the earth also. Not only do I own billions and billions and trillions of galaxies and quasars and stars and asteroids and all the rest of it, I own the earth too. Now that's very important for our discussion here, because we're talking about property rights. Property rights. And this guy comes along over here and says, hey, I own the earth. In another couple of places, he says, the earth is my footstool. The heavens are mine, and the earth is my footstool. In Deuteronomy 12, verse 6, and thither you shall bring your burnt offerings and your sacrifices and your tithes. Notice this, tithes. Plural, tithes. I don't know, boys and girls. And heave offerings of your hand and of your vows and your free will offerings and the firstlings of your herds and of your flocks. Deuteronomy 12:11. Then there shall be a place which the Eternal your God shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. And there, thither, shall you bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, your heave offerings of your hand, and of your choice vows which you vow unto the Eternal. In Deuteronomy 12, verses 17 through 19, he says, you mayest not eat within your gates the tithe of your corn or of your wine, or of your oil, or of your firstlings of your herds, or of your flock, nor any of your vows which you vow, nor your freewill offerings or heave offerings of your hand. But you must eat them before the Eternal your God in the place which the Eternal your God shall choose. you and your son and your daughter and your manservant and your maidservant and the Levite that is within your gates, and you shall rejoice before the Eternal your God in all that you put your hand unto do. Take heed to yourself that you forsake not the Levite as long as you live on the earth. All right, now, boys and girls, that last one was kind of a killer. Did you see that? He said, don't you forsake the Levite as long as you live on the earth. You still living and breathing, Phil? It's against the law for you to forsake the Levite. That Levite is to collect 10% from you, and that 10% is his as an inheritance forever, because his inheritance is with God. Your inheritance is out here in Kansas or Ohio or Texas or California. These guys, these guys are divorced from the stock market, banks, the bond market. In other words, God, you know, he woke up one day and he says, hey, listen, we've got to have a civil service, but we got to divorce these guys from the stock market. Otherwise, they'll be speculating in stocks. They'll have a conflict of interest. So he eliminated the conflict of interest and said, okay, you guys aren't going to be working in securities and exchange and stocks and bonds and out here in commercial business. You guys are going to be working in the post office and fixing the potholes in the road and building the bridges and running the fire departments and the police departments and running the city halls and so on. Now, last time I pointed out that we didn't have a Congress. We don't need a legislature. God gave us all of our law all at one time, right there at Mount Sinai, codified it all. 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and they're organized into 133 titles or subject matters of law. It's all the law we get. Can't have any more. And by the way, public school is not included. Income taxes is out. Social Security isn't provided for. And so when we looked at God's program and we said, my God, look at this fool, this tin horn dictator. Why, he doesn't have a public school system. Why, he doesn't have a retirement program. He doesn't have Social Security. He doesn't have an income tax system. What we need is a king like all the nations around us so that we too can have income tax, Social Security, and free public education. And of course, our founding fathers back in 1787, when they were meeting in Philadelphia, were just as dumb as that tin horn dictator God. They didn't understand the importance of retirement and Social Security, income tax, and government that's big enough to give you everything that you want. And so they gave us what's known as a limited government. And that's what you have here with the Levitical priesthood, a very limited government. They take care of those things that you can't take care of yourself. And by the way, they didn't take care of the military requirements either. God had another program. That comes under a title of law called war. Did you know that God was a warrior? Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a warrior. He's meaner than cat dirt, too. Takes no prisoners. You'll see that when the Israelites went through the Red Sea. And God fought our battle for us. See, Pharaoh, you know, he was chasing after our guys. And he caught up with us there at the Red Sea. And do you remember Yul Brynner? He said, your God isn't much of a general. That was Yul Brynner playing the part of Pharaoh in the movie called The Exodus. And there he was standing in his chariot. And the Israelites, you know, men, women, and children, a bunch of dumb, ignorant slaves. You know, and here they were, trudging along, trying to get through the Red Sea, and there was walls of water 110 feet tall on both sides. And he said to his general, he said, look at this Moses and his God. What kind of a general would lead his army, lead his people up to the ocean where there's no escape? And then the Red Sea parted, and Pharaoh went into the Red Sea. Do you remember that story? You know, and he was following after our guys, and our guys got up on the other side, and the walls of water collapsed. And there were no prisoners. And there were no survivors. And Josephus said there was 450,000 Egyptians killed in the Red Sea in about 20 minutes in one afternoon. You know, sometime between 2 and 2:30. I just brought that to your attention to point out that this guy doesn't take any prisoners, and if you thought he was a nice guy, you need to get that out of your head, because this guy ain't very nice. Remember sweet Jesus? You know, he's always bringing peace on earth. You remember that story? I don't know if you've heard about peace, sweet Jesus, away in the manger. Well, over here in Matthew 10, verse 34, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here for you and give you a couple of shockers. I'll shock your pants off here, Phil. It's in 10, verse 34. He says, "Think not that I have come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword." You ever heard those words before? That's Jesus, first person. If you had a red-letter Bible, it'd be printed in red letters there. Let me read that to you again. "Think not that I have come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foe shall be those of his own household, and he that loves father or mother more than me isn't worthy of me. And he that loves son or daughter more than me isn't worthy of me. And he that takes not his cross and follows after me isn't worthy of me. And he that finds his life shall lose it, and he that loses his life for my sake shall find it." I know, it's another one of those opposites that you find in the Scripture. Now, in the first program, I brought a little subject matter to your attention here. It was called the Code. You remember that in Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13? There's a corollary to that code found in the New Testament. That's for you New Testament people that don't believe in the Old Testament. I just thought I'd share it with you. It's called the Parable of the Sower. Jesus spoke in parables a lot. He used to talk in little stories and similes, And I went to Sunday school one time. In fact, I went to Sunday school twice. And the second time I went to Sunday school, we were talking about this guy that called the parable of the sower. And I'll show you how important this going to Sunday school and church is. I actually remember the lesson, and I know the Sunday school teacher's name. Her name was Mrs. Ray. And it was in the Lutheran Sunday school at the Trinity Lutheran Church at Henderson and Kay Streets. Still there. I was just by there not too long ago, driving around the streets of Eureka, and there was the old church and the old somewhat school there for 2 years. And Mrs. Ray, the Sunday school teacher, she was teaching this lesson on Jesus and the parable of the sower. And she told us, good little boys and girls that were going to Sunday school that day, she said, now Jesus spoke in parables because those poor ignorant farmers of their day didn't go to school like you lucky boys and girls. And because they were ignorant, Jesus had to speak in parables to make things easy for them to understand so that they could go to heaven and be with Jesus. Now, isn't that just real special? Well, sounds real good when you're 11 years old, but then, you know, I got a little older, and then one day I read this for myself, and I thought I'd share it with you. You know, if you're an adult, listen to this. He tells about this parable of the sower over here. And in verse 10, his disciples came to him and says, "Hey, boss, how come you're speaking to these people in parables?" Hell, man, that was the same question that they asked in the Sunday school lesson. Except in the Sunday school lesson, Mrs. Ray said, well, he spoke in parables because those poor, ignorant, dumb farmers, they couldn't understand. Now, I don't know how they figured out they were farmers, number one, how they were ignorant, number two, or how they didn't have good understanding. I don't know where they got that information, but evidently they must have got it at the Missouri Synod somewhere. But listen to Jesus, dummy that he is, not understanding the Missouri Synod of the Lutheran Church. He said in verse 11, he answered and said to them, "Because it's given to you to know the mystery of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it isn't given." Why did Jesus speak in parables? He spoke in parables because he said to his disciples, "It's given to you to understand this. To them, it isn't given." Have you got the picture? Listen, here he is. He's standing up in a boat, see? And he's offshore here, you know, a few feet, so these people have to get their feet wet if they want to come out and shake his hand. And he's talking to them, and he's telling them a story over here. And these people are all sitting there saying, "Woo, wow, God, this is wonderful. What a speaker this guy is. God, he must have gone through Toastmasters 5 times. They just loved him." His disciples come up to him and say, "Hey, we don't understand a word you're telling. What's this all about?" And he says, now it's for you to understand. It's not for them to understand. I'm speaking to 100, 200, 500 people over here. And God, they just love what I'm telling them. They don't understand a word of it. All right, now he's starting to get the drift of this. Verse 12, he says, for whosoever has, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. And whosoever has not, from him shall be taken away even that which he has. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they seeing, they see not, and hearing, they hear not, and neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled this prophecy of Isaiah, which says, by hearing you shall hear, and you shall not understand, and seeing you shall see, and you shall not perceive. Now that was cited directly from Isaiah 6, verses 19, or 9 through 13. Isaiah 6, 9 through 13. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing. Their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and they should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For truly I say unto you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which you see, and they haven't seen them. And to hear those things which you hear, and they haven't heard them. It's a mystery. That's what I told you, Phil. It's a mystery because if these people understood tithing, they would be responsible for their actions. God doesn't want these people to be responsible for their actions. So the majority of Americans prefer the income tax because they're ignorant. They've got eyes, but they can't see. They've got ears, but they can't hear. I don't know whether you got ears to see or eyes to hear, but if you do, pay attention. Gather around, boys and girls. There's more to come. Now, with that out of the way, and with the fact that God owns the heaven of heavens, and he owns the earth, and that this tithe is a property tax that's levied upon all of us Israelites to support these Levites who do not have an inheritance. And it includes all. This word all is mentioned in here several times. That's why I said, you want to know, what is it? Well, it's something more than herds, flocks, and cattle, because herds, flocks, and cattle don't comprise all of that which comes out of the ground. And where in the scripture does it say that the tithe is paid on all increase? And I told you, it was in Numbers 18, verses 20 through 28. All. And God says, I own it all. And now if you're going to take some of it, you got to give me back 10%. That gets better. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, in Deuteronomy chapter 12, and now coming into chapter 14, we're getting the second tithe. Are you starting to get the drift? Remember, it said you can't eat this tithe within your gates. What the hell is that all about? I mean, you know, if you took 10% and gave it to the Levite over here, it's already gone. How are you going to eat it within your gates? Now, notice we've been talking about tithes plural. And that's exactly right. There's three of these tithes. Here's the second one. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, it gets more specific. In Deuteronomy chapter 12, we get a drift. We get a little hint. We get, hey, there's tithes here. But now in Deuteronomy 14, he says, you shall truly tithe all the increase of your seed that the field brings forth year by year. And you shall eat before the Eternal your God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there. The tithe of your corn, the tithe of your wine, the tithe of your oil, and the firstlings of your herds and of your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Eternal your God always. Now right away Phil looks at that and says, well, Jesus, you're not only talking about herds and flocks and corn and oil. But hey man, I'm a truck driver, and I get paid in Federal Reserve notes. Well, I covered this a little earlier. Let's go back and do it again. Leviticus 27, verse 30. And all the tithe of the land, Phil, all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or the fruit of the tree, is the Eternal's. So if we took all of the tithe of the land, would that include 10% of the gold that's mined, 10% of the trucks that run on the road and haul freight, 10% of the income that people make, 10% of the meat that the butcher cuts, and 10% of the candles that the candlestick maker makes, and so on down the line? Now, I mentioned this to you earlier. You know, if we're talking about a civil service, if we're talking about running government agencies over here, and all we're going to tithe on is the increase of our agricultural products, then there's not going to be very much tithe paid. And the agricultural sector is going to bear all of the costs of running all of the services that these Levites are going to provide. In other words, all of their inheritance is going to be limited to the tithes and the support that comes from the agricultural section, and all of the rest of you people, the plumbers, the carpenters, and the electricians, get a free ride, and you don't have to pay diddly squat. Oh, I don't think that's going to fly. You can try that. When you come into the judgment and God says, hey, Phil, do you pay your tithes? No! Why, I was a plumber, man. I didn't have any wheat, corn, beans, oil. I didn't tithe. I spent my money on beer for Friday nights and watched the Super Bowl. No, it's your choice. Don't let me get in the way of anybody's happiness or success out there, but I don't think that's going to fly very well. But this story that we're reading here has something to do with a festival. Now listen to this. And you shall eat before the Eternal your God, verse 23. This is Deuteronomy 14. You're going to eat this tithe before the Eternal in the place which he shall choose to place his name there. The tithe of your corn, the tithe of your wine, corn, oil, and first things of your herds and flocks and so on. That you may learn to fear the Eternal always. Now if the way is too long for you, so that you are not able to carry it, or if the place is too far from you, which the Eternal your God shall choose to set his name there, when the Eternal your God has blessed you, then you shall turn it into money, and then bind up the money in your hand, and you shall go unto the place which the Eternal your God shall choose. See, Phil, you couldn't go to the Feast of Tabernacles because you don't have any flocks or herds. You only work for money because you're driving truck, remember? Well, then, it isn't too much of a leap, then, is it, for you to pay your tithe in kind, that if you're a cattleman, I guess you'd pay your tithe in cattle. If you were a sheep man, I guess you'd pay your tithe in sheep. I guess if you were a gold miner, you'd pay your tithe in gold. I guess if you were a truck driver, I guess you would pay your tithe in money. And now we're finding out that we're up to the second tithe. So that means 10% goes to the Levites, and 10%, we haven't figured out where this 10% goes yet. But, hey, if you're going to spend this 10%, and you can't eat it within your gates, and you have to go someplace where it is. Now, let me jump ahead a little bit. Do you know that Jesus was born up in Jerusalem, a little town outside Jerusalem called Bethlehem? But he was from Nazareth. He lived about 50 or 75 miles out of town. Why was he born up at Jerusalem? You ever wonder about that? I mean, you know, his mom and dad must have known that she was pregnant and about due. You know, normal people, if they had a brain in their head, you know, if they said, well, God, this baby's due in the next week, maybe we ought to wait until after the baby's born, huh? It's because the Feast of Tabernacles was going on. That's why. And they went up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, because there's another law over here that requires that. So they went up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, and the baby is born up at Jerusalem. See how that worked? What did they use to get up there? Well, we call that paid vacation. See, today you work for General Motors. General Motors saves back some of your pay, and then at the end of the year they give you this check. It's called your vacation pay, and then you get to go out and go on holiday, as they say in England. You know, in Canada, we're going on holiday. The word holiday is a contraction of holy day. We're going to the holy day. Holy days. Holidays, holy days, there's seven of them. You know, you got the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread, Feast of Weeks, Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, and the Last Great Day. Seven annual holy days, in which you can't come before the eternal empty, which means that you got to have a free will offering on those holy days. So Jesus was born up at Bethlehem, right outside Jerusalem, during the Feast of Tabernacles in the early fall, which was not at December 25th or at Christmas time. I know, it's a shock, but that's the way it is. And because of that, Joseph and Mary were up there spending their tithe, their vacation pay, which was called second tithe. The difference is God, not being as smart as General Motors, he thought that you would be able to save your second tithe out of your own income, out of your own wealth, out of your own money, out of your own property. Whereas today we know that you can't do that, and so General Motors saves it for you, and that gives them an interest-free loan for all of the money that they owe all of their workers for an entire year. They have this interest-free loan. They have a big slush fund of money there. And that's why God, under the wages statute, says the wages of the hireling shall not remain with you until the morning. You got to pay these people at the end of every day. God, talk about a dummy now. You know, this God over here, he's not very bright, is he? Just stop and think about it. You got to pay your laborer at the end of every day so that he has the money in his pocket so that he takes and saves his own vacation pay. My God. And God doesn't have a withholding tax program or a social security program. He figured that you'd be able to save your own tithe money and pay your tax when it was due. This goes to show you how smart he is, huh? So fortunately, we got a government that comes along and they have payroll withholding so that you never see the money, so that you don't know how much tax you're paying, so that you don't get real upset and real excited about how these politicians are squandering your money. Hang on. There's more to come. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. And it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network, or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, remember, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about tithes, tithing. Got a letter here from a fellow named Phil. He says, we've been reviewing the tithing scriptures. All of the scriptures that we see are related to agricultural products or herds, flocks, and cattle. Where in the scripture does it say that a tithe is paid on all increase? And where in the scripture does it say that labor is an increase? And if I exchange my labor for wood, isn't that a property exchange, and how did I increase from that? That actually is a tax protest argument that was originated back in the 1970s, and it has to do with exchanging your labor for Federal Reserve notes. And if you exchange your labor for Federal Reserve notes, the argument goes that I haven't gained anything. That's an even exchange. You can't tax my labor. Well, not only doesn't the government buy that argument, that is, you can be taxed on your wages. Actually, in the civil law, the income tax doesn't apply to your wages. It applies to the value of the dollars that you have exchanged your labor for. That's because labor is not taxable. However, God's a little bit different critter. He comes along and says, I'm going to tax your labor. And I'm going to tax it 10%. And that's because I own you, and I own your labor. And I own everything that's on planet Earth, and everything in the heavens, and everything that's in the heaven above the heavens. It's all my enchilada. I own it all. And because I own it all, and we have a guardian-ward relationship, you owe me that 10%, and by paying me that 10%, you recognize me as your sovereign. Now, we Americans do not recognize the God of Abraham as our sovereign. We recognize the United States of America as our sovereign. None of this God baloney gets in the way of our real business in life, which is making money. So going on there, he says, you shall turn it into money. Now remember, now this is second tithe now, and bind up the money in your hand, and you shall go to the place which the Eternal your God shall choose. And you shall bestow that money for whatsoever your soul lusts after. This is your vacation money now, see? This is your holy day money. This is 10% of what you made. Now remember, if we made $100,000, paid all of our cost of goods sold, netted 50, we ended up with 5, so we'd have $5,000 in second tithe. The second tithe is our vacation money. Normal people go to Disneyland or take a carnival cruise or go to Hawaii or run up the inside passage, you know, to Haines or someplace in Alaska. Normal people. Wild-eyed religious fanatics, you know, like me, we go up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles and the Days of Unleavened Bread and crazy things like that. And we use this second tithe money to do that. Sometimes we take the inside passage and go up to Haines to do that, and sometimes we go on a carnival cruise to do it down in the Mediterranean, not the Mediterranean, but the Caribbean, and you know, we have the same kind of good time. But instead of having IBM or General Motors write me a check, I save it myself. You know, every time I make a little money, I take 10% and I put it in tithe can number one, I take 10% and put it in tithe can number two. See, we haven't got to tithe can number three yet. That'll be a shocker when we get to tithe can number three. And you shall bestow that money for whatsoever your soul lusts after. For oxen, you want to buy a steak dinner? Or for sheep, well, if you want a leg of lamb. Or for wine, a little Cabernet Sauvignon. Or for strong drink. Oh, my God! I don't know what happened here, but that needs to be censored from the Bible. Censor that. If you've got a black pen, cross that out. That's in Deuteronomy 14, verse 26, where it says, or for strong drink, or for whatsoever your soul desires. Oh, you can leave that in, but take that strong drink out of there, because we all know, if you're religious at all, and especially if you're a Baptist, you know that booze is sin, don't you? Okay. Well, religious people know that, but evidently the God of Abraham didn't know that. So he said, you know, when you go up to the Feast of Tabernacles, if you want to buy a bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon, hell, if you want to buy a gallon of Muscadoodle, or you can have some strong drink. Now, strong drink includes such things as Jack Daniel's Wild Turkey and tequila. You know, for you guys that like strong drink. Verse 27, and the Levite that's within your gates, you shall not forsake him, because he has no part nor inheritance with you. Now, how many times does he have to be told that? Hey, Phil, this Levite guy, whoever he is, he doesn't have any inheritance. Where he gets his money is the tithe that comes from you. Now, unless, of course, your question number one is, since it only falls on agricultural people, then the agricultural people have to support the Levitical priesthood, and the rest of us gold miners and loggers and lumberjacks, we don't. Well, I told you, I don't think that's going to fly very well. You can test it if you want to. It hasn't flown well in the federal courts with the IRS, and I don't think it's going to fly any better with God in the judgment, but hell, you know, give it a test if you want to test that law. Frankly, I thought I'd pass that up, because remember I started off with Malachi 3:8. Frankly, I want the benefits that come from it. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go ahead and tithe on my money. When I come into the judgment, God's going to say, "Hey, Gordon, did you tithe?" "You bet, boss. I tithed on my gold and silver and wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil, sheep, goats, cattle. If it moved, if it wiggled, if it didn't move or if it didn't wiggle, I tithed on it anyway." And God's going to say, "You dummy, you dunderhead, you stupid nitwit, you didn't have to tithe on all that stuff outside of your cattle and your herds and the corn and your seed." And I'm going to say, "Oh, God, I didn't know that. I was really stupid, and I tithed on everything." And the reason I did it is because I wanted you to pour out onto me from the windows of heaven this great wealth that you promised me. And so far, boys and girls, I'm collecting that, and so I'm very happy. Tickled to death. So I'm just suggesting that we give it a try. Well, what the hell? If you don't like it after a year or two, you know, you can always go back to doing what you were doing. But if you find out that you make more money by tithing, you know, well, then maybe you might want to stick with the program. I figured that I just did this while I was on the break here. You know, I give you this break at the midway point. I let that advertising break go through there. That's so that you can get up and go potty. See, it's hard to sit here for a whole hour. You know, Americans don't have a very long attention span, so I could break that up into 30-minute segments. But get this. You got to pay capital gains tax, property tax, state income tax, Medicare tax, unemployment tax, city income tax, corporate income tax, gasoline tax, excise tax, luxury tax, hidden taxes. And then in addition to that, you got to pay your labor, utilities, insurance, materials, cost of goods, inventory that's unsold, theft and damage. And then before all of that, your preacher comes along and says, "You made $100,000 last year, Joe. You got to pay $10,000 in tithe, cash up front, right off the top, off the gross. Before you have paid your capital gains, property tax, state income tax, Medicare tax, unemployment tax, city income tax, corporate income tax." You know, are you getting the picture here, Joe? Listen, and then you got to pay your Social Security tax, which is 15.3%. That's $15,300, right? $15,300. And then you got to pay your income tax, which is 17%. Boys and girls, by the time you pay $10,000 in tithes, $15,300 in Social Security, and $17,000 for income tax, hey, you just paid $42,300. That's 42.3%. And that's before you pay any capital gain tax, property tax, state income tax, Medicare tax, unemployment tax, city income tax, corporate income tax, gasoline tax, excise tax, luxury tax, or hidden tax, or labor, utilities, insurance, materials, cost of goods sold, inventory unsold, theft and damage. $42,300, 42.3%. And that's off the top before you pay any of your expenses. Come on, guys. I would rather pay 10% of the net, which is about $5,000 a year. And to hell with Social Security, the income tax, and to hell with the church. Now, that's my opinion. But I guess better than that, Phil. Better. Watch this. In Deuteronomy 26, or I'm in Deuteronomy 14, excuse me, Deuteronomy 14. Remember this Levite that's within your gates? He says, "Don't forsake this Levite." This is a burden placed upon every Israelite that draws breath around the world. We're not to forsake our Levites. And at the end of 3 years, Uh-oh. At the end of 3 years, you shall bring forth all the tithe of your increase the same year, and you shall lay it up within your gates. Got that third tithe right there? That's in Deuteronomy 14:28. Write that down. And the Levite, because he has no part nor inheritance with you, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow, which are within your gates, shall come and shall eat and be satisfied, that the Eternal your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do. Notice at the end of 3 years. All right, now watch this. We got tithe number one, which goes to the Levites to run the government. We got tithe number two, which is our vacation pay. Then we got tithe number three, which is to support. Now, what we call this in the United States is welfare. Welfare. The poor you have with you always, Jesus told us one time, and you have to be able to take care of these poor people. What do you do with a widow that has kids? You know, you got these people here from, say the trade towers, you know, got knocked down and you got these widows or widowers or whatever, or you got orphans. Who takes care of those people? You see, we thought God was pretty dumb, but maybe he wasn't as dumb as we think he was. He came up with three tithes. He came up with tithe number one to run your government. And if we handle that tithe correctly, we pay it over at the local level. And in America, where our gross domestic product runs around $10, $11, $12 trillion a year, we would take about $1 trillion a year in tithe total to run the federal and all of the governments from top to bottom. Should take no more than 10%. And that wouldn't include any Social Security, it wouldn't include any public schools, and wouldn't include any welfare. No welfare at all. None. Zero zilch. Pretty limited government. Then, how do you support your schools? You educate your kid at home. Hell, man, it's your kid. Let me put the shoe on the other foot. I got a kid here. Do you think that you have some duty to pay $7,000 a year out of your labor to educate my kid? Because if you do, you're wrong. I don't want you to educate my kid. I want you to get the hell out of my life and butt out. I'll educate my own kid. How's that? And you educate yours. Now that's just about as direct and selfish as I can get. Comes right out of the Bible. In fact, there's some education standards here in the Bible that tells us to educate our children to these standards and in our own homes. And that way, you Mormon people out there in Utah, you can educate your children to your standards and your beliefs, and you won't have anybody else butting into or making any decisions for you. You don't want to educate your children to Catholic standards in Wisconsin? Terrific. Terrific. And you Catholics up in Wisconsin, you don't like the standards that are coming out of Washington? That's great. You Catholics, you educate your children to your standards, and you Methodists and Baptists and you Republicans and Democrats and Communists, everybody educates his kid the way he wants them educated. And it would save, around $500 to $600 billion a year in education costs. So you don't need a federal budget of $2 or $3 trillion a year, do you? See, you could run all of your governments from the city council right up to the president of the United States on a hell of a lot less money. And we used to do that between 1787 and 1913 when we had what we call limited government. Then somebody woke up one day and said, you know, we got to have all expansive government. We've got to have a government that can give us everything we want. And now they're big enough to take everything you got. Now, in addition to that, you got to make some kind of provision here for, and President Bush now, to his credit, said, you know, we got to rely more on churches and private organizations here to take care of charity. Well, that's exactly right. And God said, I want you to take every third year, I want you to save a tithe. Every third year. Well, there's a 7-year cycle, and the 7-year cycle is called the year of release. Seventh year of release. So you go year one, year two, and then year three. Year three, you pay three tithes. Year four, year five, you pay two tithes. Year six, you pay three tithes. Year seven, you pay two tithes. Year one, year two, you pay two tithes. Year three, you pay three tithes. That's why it's called third tithe year. Third tithe. And that's where it comes from, right there. It's Deuteronomy 14:28 and 29. And where do you spend this third tithe? Goes to the poor. Goes to widows, strangers, fatherless. And then they shall eat and be satisfied, and the Eternal your God may bless you in all the works of your hand, which you do. Remember? Over here in Malachi 3 verse 8, he said, you know, I'd like to bless you in everything that you do. I'd like to open the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing. Now, if you elect to, you don't have to pay these tithes. You can tell God to stick it right up his nose, and he'll butt out of your life. He's just not going to give you your movie money. He's not going to give you your allowance, and he's not going to open the windows of heaven for you. So here again, it's a choice that you make. If you prefer the income tax and Social Security, get after it. But this is kind of a wild new idea, and if you were to try this out for a year or two and see how you like it, I would recommend that you stop paying the income tax. Otherwise, if you keep paying the income tax and Social Security, then you got an extra $10,000 that you got to put on top of that $32,300. Now you got another $10,000, that's $42,300. Now you owe the income tax or you owe the tithe, but you don't owe both. So you shouldn't give your finger to both gods, you know, the God of the United States and the God of Abraham. You shouldn't give the finger to both gods at the same time, just one God at a time. And you ought to pick the more powerful of the two. So if you're going to quit paying that income tax, then you should stop having income. I know it's a wild step, but you know, if you didn't have any property, you wouldn't have any property tax. If you don't have any income, you won't have any income tax. Does that make sense? And when you're practicing income, you're practicing a criminal activity in commerce. It's called trafficking. And when you're paying the Social Security, you know, that's insurance, and insurance is limited liability, and limited liability violates the strict liability statute of Exodus 21:28. So, I mean, you know, you could kill three birds with one stone. I mean, you could quit paying your tithe to Baal, and you could quit practicing limited liability, and you could practice tithing and open the windows of heaven and pay yourself a lot more money and do all three all at the same time. Deuteronomy 26. When you have made an end of tithing all the tithes of your increase the third year, which is the year of tithing. Oh, it's called the year of tithing. I'm going to underline that. Third tithe year is called the year of tithing, Deuteronomy 26, verse 12. And when you have given it unto the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that they may eat within your gates and be filled. You know, when you've paid the poor people and the welfare cases around your neighborhood, then you shall say before the Eternal your God, I have brought away the hallowed things out of my house. You know, I've got first tithe, second tithe, and third tithe in my three cans. I have taken the tithes out of my house. I do this about once a year. And I have distributed these tithe monies to the appropriate parties. I have paid my taxes. I do that every year here about December the 26th. You know, right after Christmas, I go in and I pay my property tax. And then I like to get my tithes out of the way, and so I pay my tithes at the same time. Now, sometimes during the year, there's a need, like, you know, somebody's house burns down. Guy's house burned down over here, and they were kind of destitute. Now, of course, you've got the social welfare agencies. They typically come in and give some emergency aid, kind of like those tsunami victims over there. Boy, you know, when that tsunami was fresh on your mind, you were real excited, weren't you? And you sent money to the Red Cross, didn't you? Well, that was well and good last year. What have you done since? Did you think about those people continuing it? you got real excited when that earthquake hit in Pakistan and you sent a bunch of money off to somebody. But what about those people today? You know, 3, 4, 5 months later, they're living out in tents in the snow. Have you thought about them since then? That's where third tithe money goes. Third tithe. And you might even give a little second tithe, and hell, you might even consider some first tithe, because, you know, unless you got a Levite in the neighborhood, you might have a lot of first tithe that you don't know where to put. We'll talk about that as we progress. So, notice here that you've got a year of tithing, and when you have paid all of your taxes, all of your tithes, you've taken all the hallowed things, that's your tithe. That tithe is hallowed. That's kind of holy money. And you've given them unto the Levite, and unto the stranger, to the fatherless, to the widow, according to all of the commandments which you have commanded me. I have not transgressed your commandments, and neither have I forgotten them. Hey, I'm sorry to say this, but here in America, we not only have transgressed these tithing laws, we have forgotten them. It's worse than that. I don't think the average Joe Sixpack ever knew about them. I don't think they teach you this in church. I never learned this in church. I don't think they want you to know this. I don't think they want you to research out this tithing law over here. This tithe goes to the Levites. It doesn't go to Jerry Falwell. It doesn't go to church. It doesn't go to religion. Verse 14, he says, I have not eaten thereof in my mourning, neither have I taken away aught thereof for any unclean use. I haven't bought any Bud six packs with it. I didn't spend it on tickets to the Super Bowl, nor given aught thereof for the dead. That's kind of an odd one right there. Nor given aught. I'm going to underline that. Thereof for the dead. Have you ever noticed that people, they, especially in pagan countries, you know, Pakistan, so on, the Buddhists mainly, they light candles for the dead and they bring food offerings. Catholics used to do this on Halloween. They'd bring food and put it on the graves of their departed loved ones. There's a statutory prohibition against that, and you just saw it right there with your own eyeballs. It's in Deuteronomy 26:14, nor given aught thereof for the dead, but I have hearkened to the voice of the Eternal my God, and I have done according to all that you have commanded me. Look down from your holy habitation from heaven, and bless your people, Israel, and the land which you have given us, as you swore unto our fathers, a land that flows with milk and honey. Now listen, boys and girls, Australia, New Zealand, America, and Canada flow with milk and honey. And to a lesser extent, our brothers over in Europe, you know, the Dutch, French, Swedes, English, their lands also to a lesser extent, but they also have been pretty prosperous people. And they're all Israelites, and all those people owe this tithe. But they have all adopted income tax. And like I pointed out, right off the top comes 40%. Seems like to me that the 23% in the worst case scenario plus some holy day offerings is a hell of a lot better than 42% plus the capital gain plus property, state income tax, Medicare, unemployment, city income, and, you know, just my common sense tells me. All right, now next time we'll take up Proverbs 3, and I'll show you what substance is and what increase is. Substance and increase next time when we talk about tithing. Three tithes, but hey, we haven't got to the holy day offerings yet, and we haven't found out who these mysterious Levites are. That's next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Okay, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.